BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk to hit a topic that has not been addressed for some time, but one that's very important. You see, the topic concerning the use of marijuana continues as a major debate item. A number of states have already or are seeking the approval of the medicinal use of marijuana. Others are advancing the recreational use of marijuana. Others are pushing for the decriminalization of marijuana. What exactly is marijuana? What impact does it have upon the body, your blood, your brain? Does the Bible condone marijuana usage? Well, join us today as we welcome Dr. James Avery. He is the National Medical Director for DiversiCare Healthcare. It's a visiting assistant professor as well of medicine at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He's a fellow in the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Care. He was named one of the 50 most influential physician executives by Modern Physician magazine and was also nominated as one of the most, one of the 100 of the most influential people in healthcare by Modern Healthcare magazine. He's the author of Marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed. And Dr. Avery, thank you so much for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'd like us to begin by defining terms. We hear terms like hemp, cannabis, and marijuana. Are these all one and the same, or is there a difference between them?
You know, those terms get tossed around frequently, and you know, what the technical definition is can be sometimes different than the more common use. So basically, when people say marijuana, they really mean the plant. It could also include, it could also mean THC, which is one of the chemicals in it, mm-hmm. and it could also mean CBD. So you really have to dig a little deeper. Now, hemp, on the other hand, has a very defined definition. It's a plant, like marijuana, it's a plant, but it has to have less than 0.5% THC. So it's a very distinct definition there. Cannabis, I mean, these terms can get confusing. Cannabis is actually the scientific name for the entire genus. So when someone says cannabis, that could be hemp or marijuana. And that's when you see it capitalized with a C. So it gets a little confusing. But think of marijuana as equal to weed, pot, hashish, Mary Jane, however you want to call it. Those are all the common name for marijuana.
Okay. Well, marijuana is often grown for that chemical you talked about, THC. So what exactly is THC?
Yeah, it's an abbreviation of a rather long name. Tetrahydrocannabinol. It's a tetrahydrocannabinol, and it is the most common cannabinoid. Now, a cannabinoid is a chemical that's unique to the marijuana plant. You know, the way God made the world, each plant, almost every plant, has some unique chemicals within it. That's what makes it unique. Well, we call cannabinoids the chemicals in the marijuana plant. And of those chemicals, the most common is THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD, cannabidiol. And then there's a whole bunch more. There's about 100 or so cannabinoids, again, chemicals unique to the marijuana plant. You know, sometimes we forget marijuana, it's just the plant. You know, that's all it is, and it's how we use this plant. Just like, you know, when God created fire, fire can be used for good and can be used for bad. And the same would be true if we think of it in a creational way of the marijuana plant.
So we're going to be dealing with THC first. We'll get into the CBD a bit later. THC, is this something that do people smoke, or is this something that can also be orally ingested?
Yeah, so people have been very, very creative. And before we say how they get it in, Jim, just for a quick second, THC is the active, psychoactive ingredient, the one that causes people to feel high. Let's just call it the agent that makes people high.
Okay.
And, you know, people sometimes, and this is one of the biggest misconceptions, THC naturally in the marijuana plant, if we look back at history, was somewhere around 2%, meaning 2% of the dry weight was THC. In the 50s, in the 60s and 70s in the U.S., THC went up, you know, 2% maybe. People started to farm it a little differently. But recently, scientists have gotten involved, and THC levels can hit 30% of dry weight now in marijuana. So the current marijuana is often 5 to 10 to even maybe 15 times more potent than the marijuana in the that they saw that people used in the 60s and 70s. And the THC is what we're talking about when we say about the potency of marijuana.
So and okay, and so to the edible nature of it versus smoking?
So you can smoke it, you can inhale it, you can vape it, you can eat it, oral ingestion. It can be taken as an oil. It can be taken as a suppository. When I was doing the research for my book, I went to some dispensaries in California. I was there on a business meeting, had my wife come with me, and as they had it in every form possible. They had it in brownies, croissants, suppositories. You say, why suppositories? Because people can't, it's nothing to be smelled, you know. They have it in a vape form. Now, you might say, well, why not just always do it orally? Why not do it in the gummy bears, which is a very common format? Well, when you smoke something, it gets absorbed quicker and you get the high faster. In fact, the only reason to smoke anything is always that you get a more rapid ingestion into the bloodstream. So that's why people smoke and vape it versus the oral consumption. But oral consumption now, these edibles, they call them, are now over 50% of all marijuana sales in California and Colorado are actually ingested now.
Dr. James Avery is our guest here today on Crosstalk, and then talking about this potency. So for the person who said, well, if somebody said that they smoked marijuana in the 60s, it's not apples to apples then what it is today as far as the potency of marijuana.
No, some people have said it's like comparing, you know, a glass of wine with heroin. It's a much more potent substance. In fact, even in liberal countries, for example, in the Netherlands, they are proposing that if the marijuana is over 15%, that it be reclassified as a hard drug and put in the same category as heroin, cocaine, et cetera. And that's a country that has been notorious for having very liberal drug laws.
So let's talk about the impact of THC then on the body and one's blood and the brain. I saw in your book that you write that it starts fun but ends up hijacking the brain. So let's talk about its impact on the body, the blood, and the brain.
Okay, so once a person ingests THC, it goes rapidly through the body. And THC is what we call lipophilic, meaning it loves fat. And so what happens, it goes into tissues that have a high fat content. That's typically liver, spleen, kidney, fatty tissues, of course, and the brain. And it also passes into the breast milk through the placenta and into the circulation of unborn babies. So what happens is once it gets in there, it attaches to what we call cannabinoid receptors. And those are the receptors that are associated with thinking, decision-making, memory, pleasure, appetite, time perception, all those kind of things. And it's that those receptors, when it connects there, that causes people to feel this the effect of being high, this euphoria. And they often will report, you know, changes in appetite and time changes and coordination changes, those kind of things, and an impairment of motor skills. So all of this happens. Now, because it's in the fatty tissues, it lasts a long time. In other words, it doesn't just get ingested in the bloodstream and excreted through the liver and kidneys, which is fairly routine. It actually goes into the fatty tissues and then slowly comes out. That's one of the reasons we don't have a breathalyzer test for THC.
Well, so it gets into the blood system then and the brain itself? What's its impact on the brain?
Yeah, no, it goes right into the brain. It goes, you know, the brain has an unusual barrier called the blood-brain barrier. The way God designed our brain was fascinating, that certain toxins, certain chemicals, they can circulate in our bloodstream, but they don't go into the bloodstream of the brain. Very intriguing, and it protects the brain from various things we might ingest, including infections. That's why you don't hear about brain infections very often. Mm-hmm. You can have lung infections, liver infections, kidney infections, but you don't hear about brain infections very often. Only a few organisms can get past this blood-brain barrier. Unfortunately, THC, because it's lipophilic, can get through the blood-brain barrier and have all of those effects we mentioned on the brain. Mm-hmm.
So why is there a greater adverse effect of THC on those younger than age 25? What is it about the brain that's different?
Yeah, so what we've, you know, brain research over the last 10 years has been phenomenal. There's been such new scientific data. And what we have found is that the brain develops rather slowly compared to other organs. And in fact, in males, the brain is not fully developed till 25. And in females, it's somewhere around 20, 21. And that explains a lot of times people feel now the impulsiveness of youth, bad decision making. The frontal lobe isn't fully developed. And so what happens is if you get exposed to THC before the brain is fully developed, particularly before the age of 18, the risk of addiction is 1 in 6. Mm-hmm. 1 in 6 will actually have a substance use disorder. While after the age of 25, the risk drops to 1 in about 11. And this is among heavy users. So among heavy users, 1 in 6 if you're young, 1 in out of 11 if the brain is fully developed. And as we get older, the risk of addiction becomes even less. But it still persists even into adulthood.
Hmm. And yet it's this age group of 25 and younger that you reference are greatly influenced to begin the use of marijuana.
Yeah, the effects include increase in suicides, apathy, addiction again being much higher, problems with accidents, falls, risky sexual behavior. And one of the most disturbing things is even mental disease. People have related schizophrenia to the early use of marijuana. And, of course, it's always controversial, marijuana being a gateway drug, meaning does marijuana introduce people to opioids? And it seems the data has swung, the pendulum keeps on swinging on this, but the data certainly suggests that people who smoke marijuana are much more likely to go on to opioids than, for instance, people who smoke cigarettes.
Oh.
And people who don't use either are much, much less likely to ever go on to heroin or opioids.
We're going to take a quick break here. Dr. James Avery is our guest, taking an honest look at marijuana today. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about CBD. And we're also going to be talking about this medicinal use of marijuana and recreational use of marijuana. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, the age-old question, is it true that man evolved from the apes?
No, it is not, Chris. Humans were created separately. The animals, including the apes, were created after their kind, but humans were created in the image of God. Man is not related to the animals. But according to evolution, we are descended from the animals. It used to be thought that a rodent, a rat-like animal, was the common ancestor of all the mammals, but a recent study showed that the closest living relative of the common ancestor is the aardvark. How about that? We came from an aardvark. Chris, isn't it about time we recognize the evolutionary view as abject foolishness? Isn't it time we go back to Genesis and get it right?
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, Dr. James Avery, National Medical Director for Diversicare Healthcare. And we are talking about marijuana today, taking an honest look at marijuana. He has published a book, Marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed, and breaking it down for you here today. We know that there are a number of states, some have already accepted this and are promoting it and make these false promises how it's going to bring so much revenue into the state. We'll no doubt be talking about some of these issues. Others are talking about, well, we need to bring it in for medicinal purposes. We'll be talking about that as well. Lord willing, we'll have some time here to open up phone lines, take your phone calls as well. So, Dr. Avery, we've mentioned the THC, and I know there's a whole lot more that could be said, but there you also mentioned CBD, and people who are commonly seeing CBD oil now, they're seeing CBD shops, prop up in communities across the nation. What is the CBD, and what is there, if any, connection to THC from it?
Yeah, so CBD is cannabidiol. It's, again, another one of those 100, unique chemicals we talked about that are only found in the marijuana plant. And it's played second fiddle for sure to THC, but it's no slouch. There's over $2 billion in sales, and it's marketed as a cure-all for everything. And, I know a lot of Christians who seem to fall for this type of hyperbole. There's hardly a disease out there that I haven't seen connected with CBD. Mm. Healing powers in diabetes and cancer, for sleep, for anxiety, for arthritis. I've seen even pastors promoting it. And it's made its way even into dog treats, Jim, if you can imagine that. Yet it has such little basis in science. CBD is the second most common chemical in marijuana. It has a slight anxiolytic effect, meaning it does seem to reduce anxiety somewhat. And interestingly, it counteracts THC. It almost neutralizes some of the more potent aspects of THC. So the new marijuana plants have a lot of THC and very little CBD. Now, what's happened is a lot of people, a lot of farmers, have switched from other products and gone into growing marijuana and hemp. And so there's a ton of CBD on the market. You have this large supply, which means low cost, means lots of profit. So there are a lot of unscrupulous people who are selling CBD everywhere. Chicago Tribune had a headline article, "Why That CBD Oil You Bought Is Probably Useless." And what you look at, you go through the studies. It's not regulated. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know. When they did a study at Virginia Commonwealth, they found that a lot of the CBD products didn't even contain the stated amount. There's nobody regulating it. The FDA is not regulating anybody. So first of all, you don't know what you're getting. Second of all, there's a shocking lack of evidence. We know it seems to be helpful in very rare pediatric seizure disorders because it slows down maybe the synapses in the brain. It may have some anti-inflammatory, antioxidant benefits. All of these are maybes. You hear me say maybe because the studies just have not been done. Plus, there are really safety concerns. It can cause diarrhea, somnolence, sleepiness, decreased appetite. So what happened is people see these possible side effects and they say, decreased appetite? Oh, great. Let's market it as for food, for weight loss. Mm-hmm. Oh, somnolence? It makes people a little sleepy maybe? Let's market it for sleep. What I would suggest to people is there's two FDA-approved CBD medicines, meaning the FDA has done the research and approved these medications for seizures. Let's let these studies play out. Christians particularly should wait to the randomized clinical trials come on, where you compare it to a placebo. So I'll tell you a brief story, Jim. My neighbor across the street invites me over to her house, now all the neighbors. And she's a Christian, goes to our church, and she tells about this compound that took away her hip pain. And then somebody else said, I took it, it took away my headaches. And lo and behold, it contained CBD. The problem is this, Jim. if I were to have 100 people and I was to give them a red jelly bean, and I were to tell them, this is the greatest stuff in the world. You will sleep like a baby tonight. This has been done. Placebo effect. A third of those people the next morning would say, this is the greatest thing since mankind.
Mm-hmm.
A third of them will say, you know, maybe it helped. I think it might have helped. I'm not sure. And a third will say it didn't. So what happens is you have this placebo effect, and you have people mouth to mouth saying this is the cure-all for their hip pain or their sleep or whatever. CBD, the Harvard Medical School, Peter Cohen, did a podcast just last year, and he ended the podcast by saying to his colleagues and his patients, he said, my advice is avoid all CBD products. Wait until the studies are done. You're probably going to do more harm than good.
So those who claim, oh, I had this relative that was in great pain, they were helped by this, or helped by marijuana itself, there's reason to take pause in all of that because it being a pain reliever can have the same impact as a red jelly bean.
Exactly. Now, let me do say, I hope that the studies come back positive. In fact, I believe that probably down the road, one of these 100 unique chemicals in the marijuana plant may be found to be of benefit. I hope it will be found to be a benefit to mankind, that we could make drugs that are approved by the FDA, that we understand how much to take, how much to use, when to use it, in what conditions, those type of things. But just like we waited for FDA-approved vaccines, we should be waiting for FDA-approved medications.
Doctor, the push toward both the decriminalization of marijuana as well as legalization, they've made some great strides. Often it's first introduced to a state, we need this for medicinal purposes, but then on its heels is the proposal for legislation allowing for recreational use. Some states jump in it, you know, all together at once. But let's begin with this medicinal purposes. We've talked about it somewhat here. Is this indeed a medicine? Is marijuana a legitimate medicine? We often hear the mantra, follow the science. Does science substantiate the use of marijuana? Or how did we get to this point of calling it a medicine?
Yeah, that was a very clever marketing strategy. What had happened was, in the beginning, they advertised marijuana proponents, you know, said, you know, let's call it a rights issue. We have a right to have marijuana. We should have liberty and freedom to decide for ourselves what we want. And then, very cleverly, they said, let's attach medicine to marijuana. And there's quotes from the marijuana proponents saying, let's use this as a stepping stone to recreational marijuana. Now, never before in the history of the world Has a medicine been called a medicine by popular vote? And both our Surgeon General and our U.S. Health and Human Secretary, Alex Azar, and our Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, both of them said there's no such thing as medical marijuana. The Cleveland Clinic said we will not be recommending medical marijuana for any of our patients because we believe there are better medical alternatives. And, you know, Dr. Bach of Memorial Sloan Kettering wrote a piece, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, op-ed piece, and his title was, If Weed is Medicine, So is Budweiser. Meaning, you know, years ago, Jim, there were those snake oil guys who went all around the country selling snake oil. We know now all of that was alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have enough alcohol, that can help your pain. That can help you sleep. That can help, you know, your hip pain to go better. And so this is the same game. It's the same. It's snake oil of our modern day. You know, we have no studies for what the things people are claiming. They often will say it's okay for people on hospice. I'm a hospice physician. You know, it's just not the case. It causes problems. There are side effects. And the states have approved certain diagnoses, like Lou Gehrig's disease, for example. The medical studies are clear. It actually caused negative effects in ALS patients. But in every state, there it is, ALS is an approved indication. So I hope someday, and we have by the way, we have two FDA-approved THC medications. But I don't want people to fall into this little trick that that people fell into years ago when there was snake oil being peddled for everything.
Let's just, in the interest of time here, jump to the recreational use of marijuana. We're told this is going to remove the black market. It's going to bring down the prices, the drug cartel. Does this remove the black market?
Actually, what it does do is it increases the number of users. Because some people think, well, if something is legal, it must be okay. So first of all, we have more users. But once people are users, particularly heavy users, they often say, I don't want to pay the taxes on this. So the studies show in California and Colorado, the black market has actually increased. Because once you have people using it, they want to find the cheapest possible form that's safe. And that usually is going to be on the black market because, the whole thing was let's tax it. And so that's really not going to work very well. Mm-hmm. And I want to emphasize that when legalization is not decriminalizing it, legalization is commercialization gone wild. In other words, when you have people who can make money from something, they want to have more users. My specialty is pulmonary, so I'm a lung doctor who also does hospice. And the cigarette companies played the same game years ago, which was if we get them when we're young, we hook them for life. And so we see marijuana now as they need to sell more product. That's the way it works once it's legalized. So you have the brownies I mentioned, the gummy bears, and honey, and creams, and juices, and sodas, and many of them geared towards children. Cookies, gummy bears, cakes. It's unbelievable the creativity that people have used. Because it's lipophilic, again, it can be used. They have Girl Scout cookie shatter, they call it, Santa Claus candy. They even have a cartoon character called Buddy. Very similar, if you think about it, to Joe Camel, which was clearly geared to young people. So when you think about recreational marijuana, people shouldn't, they're legalizing a drug called THC. So this is not hippie farmers growing a little THC in their backyard. This is corporations like Altria who will be marketing this stuff heavily to people because they want to get profit for their stockholders. This is profit over people.
Dr. Avery, I know we're going to be interrupted in our next break in your response here, but we'll pick it up on the other side. But we are promised great revenue. States are promised all the revenue this is going to produce for our state. It's going to help us build roads. It's going to help us with our education. But never in that equation do we hear about the social cost of marijuana to that state as well. So let me have you start addressing it now, and we'll all pick up that discussion after the break.
No, I mean, I think that's one of the big arguments is that it's going to increase tax revenues. But the studies have showed it does, but I think in Colorado, and I don't have a number in front of me, I think it was like 1% of their state budget actually came from marijuana. And just think about it. Do we really want the government to be dependent on increasing sales?
Very interesting thought. We're going to pick up more discussion after the break. Dr. James Avery with us here today on Crosstalk, taking an honest look at marijuana. Back in 1 minute here on the VCY American Network.
How is your marriage relationship? Do you have a spirit-filled marriage? Is your marriage one in which the lost world can look in and see Christ represented? Many of us know that we are called to have such a marriage, but fail to make it happen, perhaps due to lack of knowledge on the topic. In the booklet, What Does a Spirit-Filled Marriage Look Like?, biblical counselor Susan Heck draws principles from the book of Ephesians. She presents 13 doctrines that guide a marriage that will bring glory to God. You'll learn about humility, forgiveness, generosity, unity, and much more. You'll also learn not only to know these principles, but how to grow them in your marriage relationship. VCY is offering one copy of this booklet for a donation of $6, 5 copies for a donation of $24, or 10 copies for $42. Just call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Dr. James Avery is our guest here today on Crosstalk as we take an honest look at marijuana. He's put together a book entitled Marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed. Doctor, how is it our listeners can obtain a copy of your book? I'm sure many pastors will find it of use, legislators will find it of use, and just the Christian home to gain understanding on this issue.
Yeah, no, they can get it on Amazon, and I think they will find it to be a valuable resource as they can have the facts for their children, for the people who attend their church, for people who their neighbors. I think it's been and 100% of the proceeds, not just profits, 100% of the proceeds go back to nonprofit Christian organizations. Mm.
Again, the book is called Marijuana, subtitled An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed, written by Dr. James Allen Avery. So, Dr. Avery, we're talking about the societal cost in this as well, because we're promised great revenues that will be produced by our states to help our schools and roads and commerce here in our state. But are we not also talking about family breakups, marital discord, abuse? Are we not also talking about these kind of issues that should enter into the equations and addiction hotlines and so forth and emergency room visits?
I think you're right there. Increased medical costs for people with addiction, people who are filling up the emergency rooms. You definitely are going to see social disruption of families and communities, and particularly in the low-income folks, the same people who suffer the most from alcohol addiction, cigarette addiction, and gambling, the same people who buy lottery tickets are the same people who are going to be hurt the most by marijuana. We're going to see more car accidents. We're going to see the use of harder and more dangerous drugs. You know, we might see premature death. We will see premature deaths and illnesses. You put that all together, and, you know, how do you figure out these type of costs? What does the cost mean to a family that's been destroyed by it, from a teenager who now has mental disease to somebody whose loved one died in a car accident because somebody was smoking marijuana? You know, marijuana users, one of the unusual things about marijuana is when it wears off cognitively first, meaning they get clear in their brain first, but it wears off slower in the muscular ability, their ability to move their muscles and have fine more motor coordination. And so what happens is with alcohol, it's about the same. You get clear in your brain. At the same time, your muscles get back to normal. Your motor coordination gets back to normal. Because it's delayed in marijuana, people often feel they're clearer than they are. So they're driving impaired, but they don't sense it. Well, they don't know how impaired they are because they feel pretty clear mentally. But motor-wise, their ability to hit the brake or to have reflexes to respond to something are markedly impaired. And sadly, 70% of marijuana users have said they've driven high. And the same percent, there's like 68%, have said they don't think they can get caught because there's no test. There's no breathalyzer test. Nothing can tell us whether somebody is high from marijuana.
So you mentioned some of these short-term effects. Are there long-term effects for marijuana use?
You know, the long-term effects tend to go particularly with apathy, no interest in anything, mental disease, bipolar disease, those type of things, where it really tends to decrease people's initiative, their interest in anything. And it hijacks the brain, as you mentioned earlier. What it does is it becomes the main thing in their life. How can I get high again? Very similar to end stages of alcohol, end stages of heroin, end stages of cocaine. Mm-hmm. The only difference is overdoses on marijuana are very rare compared to overdoses with opioids.
Some will say this, Doctor, God created every plant in the field, and it was good. I mean, Genesis 1:30 says, I've given you every green herb for meat, and that's affirmed later in Genesis 9:3. So from this, is it correct or incorrect to conclude that God made marijuana, he called it good, he's given to us it as a plant to be used and consumed? Is that correct or incorrect thinking?
Well, it's partially correct, like most lies, like most good distortions. Yes, I think you could say in the beginning, God created marijuana and he saw that it was good. But you see, the fall happened. Sin entered the world, and man began using creation for selfish reasons, for unethical reasons, for unprincipled reasons. Let's just think about fire. It keeps us warm at night. Many homes and businesses have been lost to arson. So we need to add a qualifier to the word good. God made marijuana good for its own intended purposes. And right now, we don't know yet what those purposes are. We have some FDA-approved medicines from it. So as we were given dominion over the earth and subdue it, we're supposed to use things to its fullest potential, to its greatest good. So once you say marijuana is just a plant and it's green, arsenic is also in the earth. So what we really have to say to ourselves, how do we make wise choices? Is it wise to use marijuana based on biblical principles? Is it being a faithful servant or an unfaithful servant? Is it make a person who is a child of God closer to God, or might it make them less likely to be close to God? So those are the key questions a person needs to ask.
We're going to open our phone lines here and take questions that you might have ask your question, formulate that in your mind, call, ask the doctor, we'll get as many as we can. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Our number here today to Crosstalk, again, the book is entitled Marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed, which you can go online and find this. You also have a connection, Doctor, with the Christian Medical and Dental Association. I believe they're the ones who published the book. Is that correct?
That's right. And it can be accessed. You can get the book on the CMDA website as well as Amazon.
Great. We're going right to the phone lines. Calling from Inglewood, Florida is Pam. Hi, Pam. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to let you know that I have personal experience of how bad marijuana can be. My first husband, he was turned on to it when he was 13 years old, and he smoked it for 20 years until he died. And it just totally fried his brain. He couldn't function. He couldn't hold a job. It just totally messed him up.
Yeah. Well, we're sorry for that, Pam. And, Doctor, I'm sure that you've heard many, many a story, just like what Pam is sharing today.
Yeah, I thank you for calling, Pam, and I'm very sorry you had to suffer along with that. And that I hear people cry all the time telling us stories of their spouse or their teenage son or their teenage daughter and what has happened because of marijuana. Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to Mesa, Arizona. We have Carlos calling. Hi, Carlos. You're on the air.
Hey, Jim. I just wanted to make a comment real quick with the doctor saying. I've been smoking for a while, actually, and just recently I've wanted to quit because, just like you said, I questioned it. Does this make me closer to God? And, you know, I thought about it deep down in my soul, and it doesn't, because I'm hurting myself in a way, even though he said it was good, but you have to be wise as well. And personally, I didn't get anything out of it, you know, besides the feel. And that's just kind of what life is now. People are encouraging to feel things, and these things I don't feel have gotten me nowhere, and I want to walk with God. And if I want to walk with God, I believe that I got to, you know, let go of these things and be wiser, like doctor says. But thank you for your time, Jim. Thank you for your time, Doctor. Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to make that comment real quick.
Thank you, Carlos, and appreciate your honesty in that regard. Praise the Lord here. Someone who said, I've been doing it, but this is not something that's drawn me closer to God. Matter of fact, oftentimes, Doctor, the senses are dulled where we can't be attuned to what God is trying to communicate to us.
Oh, that's very true. And I think the other thing, it's dangerous and naive for Christians to assume, you know, they can limit their use of marijuana. We're warned, you know, in 1 Corinthians not to be mastered by anything. And it's much harder to get off marijuana than most people think. So for our caller, I would say, as you try to taper it down slowly, if you need help, seek help from a substance use addiction physician who can help get you off of it. One of the saddest things is that people don't recognize the side effects. As they try to stop it, Jim, what happens is they feel a bit anxious. They don't relate it to marijuana. They feel a little jumpy, and they start thinking about taking some. And so they don't relate that as a withdrawal symptom, but it's a subtle restlessness, a subtle insomnia. They're just not sleeping well at night. They just don't feel very good. Mm-hmm. So most people at that point just go back to the marijuana, not realizing this is solidifying the addiction in them. So it's a subtle withdrawal symptom, not like heroin where people are shaking and having chills and all that. It's subtle, and it's almost more devious.
Also, let's see, we have Pam in Surprise, Arizona. Pam, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a question. I'm a retired RN, and I just graduated nursing school back in 1970, and I was reading an article that was at the very back of the American Journal of Nursing, and it was hooking up marijuana use with chromosomal damage. Can you address that issue?
Thank you, Pam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, Pam. That's a very good question. There is some evidence in animal studies, particularly in fetal animal studies, that it can affect chromosomes and DNA. That's not been found yet, or it hasn't been explored even enough in humans to really know. You see, one of the things is because marijuana was a Schedule I drug and still is by the federal government, we don't have the studies that we normally would have. So we're not really sure about these things. But when it's a prescription drug, it's not recommended for people who are pregnant, for people who are young, because of some potential problems. So that could very well be a reality. We just don't know yet.
Thank you, Pam. Brian is next. Princeton, Minnesota. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, when I was in junior high and high school, a lot of my friends smoked marijuana. And what I noticed as my life continued, a lot of them just kind of seemed to have slowed down, and they didn't aspire for anything. They didn't have any ambition, and their life just kind of seemed stopped, including the way they dressed. Their styles just stopped in that era, and it's just kind of sad that, their life consisted of A and not the A, B, C, D, E that God gave us as we progress in our lives. That's my only comment.
Thank you, Brian. Any response, Doctor?
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be seen in quite a few people. And in many people, it's not, you know, but marijuana, it's sort of like putting a frog in a pan of boiling water and slowly heating it up. For some people that are susceptible, it will cause exactly what you said, isolation, antisocial behaviors, poor school performance, poor job performance, sort of what I think the earlier caller, Pam, I think said, you just can't hold a job, you can't get things done. So for those that are in that category, those folks who get addicted, this is a very, very common finding.
Thank you for the call. And we're just seconds from the break. It's coming up right now, so we're going to quick take a break. We'll come back to more of your calls here in a number of cities here across the nation. Dr. James Avery is our guest today as we take an honest look at marijuana. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. The docu-movie Absolute Proof is available for you to watch free of charge at wvwtv.com/proof. This is not a political documentary. This is an educational documentary to preserve our republic for all people. This shows what happened with the cyber attack on our election cycle by enemies foreign and domestic. It was produced as executive producers by myself, Brandon House, Mike Lindell, and Mary Fanning. We filmed it and post-edited this in 6 days. It was a Herculean achievement for the American people and for our religious liberty, economic freedom, and God-given rights. I hope you'll spread it far and wide and watch this educational public service documentary. wvwtv.com/proof. That's wvwtv.com/proof. We'll be right back.
friends, if you want more comprehensive information, we've covered a lot, but not near as much as what you'll find in this book on marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed. You can go to the Christian Medical and Dental Association site, cmda.org, cmda.org. Click on resources, and you'll be able to find it there. Our guest today, Dr. James Avery, and going right back to the phone lines, Julie in Pensacola, Florida, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a quick question and then a quick comment. My question is, how did marijuana ever come to be known to be something of value to the drug industry? And then the second comment is, about a year ago I had a renter that was smoking it. I'm not knowing that, but I had found out just because I smelled it in the garage, and he was apparently smoking it in the garage, and said, you know, when I was confronted, it said it was a medicinal marijuana. And, you know, my first thing, you know, he said he had for anxiety, but he has to have it every night. So he's more or less addicted to it. It's like, I have to have it type feeling. But, you know, what about us, the people that have to smell this? You know, it was just a gross smell. And, you know, I don't want that in my lungs. And I'm sure that other people that, you know, don't want a marijuana in their lives and come across a situation where there are people that do use it for medicinal purposes, which I think is wrong, but they do. And, you know, what about us people that, you know, they put us in a situation where we have to breathe it?
Okay, thank you for that, Julie. So she's asking about secondhand effects as well as how did this come up to be of value?
Yeah, how it got so popular, how it's sort of it's almost like a marijuana tsunami now, is that there were three groups that really all came together. The first is we have these corporations seeking profit. Big alcohol, big tobacco have invested heavily and are lobbying heavily in state legislatures. So number one, corporations. Number two, politicians. Politicians, and I hate to say this, Republicans and Democrats, have been supporting it, and because politicians like tax revenue, like anything that gives them tax revenue. Number three has been cannabis, I would call them enthusiasts, people who really promote personal unlimited freedom. They don't see freedom as being really your most free when you're under law, when you have some fence boundary around you, but this unlimited, unbridled freedom. Also, so you put those together, and the final thing is there's been a plethora of celebrity endorsements. You know, Lady Gaga was one of the few who said she was addicted and it was hard to get off of, but she got off of it. One of the few people. Most people, they go on these late night shows and it's all giggles and gaggles when people talk about marijuana, but are they talking about the lives lost, about the car accidents, about the people losing jobs? So you put those five things together, corporates, corporate profit, politicians, the cannabis enthusiasts, the celebrities, it has created a momentum that even science can't stop.
Well, I'm going to bring Maxine in from Prairie du Chien because I believe you also have a question dealing with the secondhand nature of this. So go ahead, Maxine.
Yes, I was wondering, he touched on, of course, the preborn babies, but also toddlers, youth, and even older folks, because I have neighbors that smoke it, and it's in the hallways all the time. So, yes.
Great. Thank you, Maxine. So, Doctor, both callers here are asking about that secondhand impact, as well as the impact upon young children, toddlers, et cetera.
Yeah, we definitely are seeing, we're seeing more children being in the emergency room, often actually from oral ingestion, from gummy bears that their parents had laying around. With the secondhand studies, we know that marijuana smoke is more impure than cigarette smoke. There's a lot more things that go into the air. We know there's an increase in bronchitis. We know there's an increase in emphysema. There's been some studies that suggest, not sure yet, some cancer-related elements to it. And all smoke is bad. I mean, just that's I'm a pulmonologist. All smoke is bad. No medicine should ever be approved that smokes. Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, anything. We never give medicine that you smoke. So all smoke is bad. But the studies on secondhand has not been well done yet. We don't know, actually. And that's what I'm getting to. Here we are rushing into legalizing things when the science hasn't even been studied. There are so many unknowns, and we would never do that, even if we had a vaccine for COVID. We want the studies first.
Mm-hmm.
So to release this first and then say we'll do the studies seems, especially with the medical marijuana, it's just it's trying to go from medical to recreational. It's a stepping stone, nothing more, really.
Doug is calling from Ringgold, Georgia. Doug, you're on the air.
Yeah, I made a comment about God made all the plants and things. And what about tobacco plant? And one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
The smoke, all smoke is gas.
Okay.
No, you're exactly right. And that's why I think the question should not be for Christians, you know, is it legal? It should be, is it wise? Are we a good servant if we do it? Is this what God would have us do? And that question is much easier to answer, and it's more clear.
Yeah. Thank you for the call here, Doug. And we are less than a minute here. We're not going to get any more phone calls in because, Doctor, I want you to have the last word here as to what you want to leave with our listeners on this particular issue.
I would just ask you, when you see it happening in your state, to call your state legislators. And, you know, ask them, are we going to be a better nation because we have legalized another hallucinogenic? Is this better for the young people? Are we putting profits over health? You know, I think if we can understand that, I think all of us on this call would reject the idea that America would be a better country if marijuana was sold on the corner of every Main Street.
Mm.
And I think when you think of it in that terms, Let's fight this for the sake of our next generation, that they won't grow up in a country where marijuana is pervasive, it's accepted, and maybe even encouraged.
Whatever we eat or drink, whatever we do, do all to the glory of God. And we need to take that into consideration here as well. Dr. James Avery, our guest here today, thank you, Doctor, for your time with us this afternoon. Thank you for your research in this book and just for sharing a heart of concern to people across this nation.
It's been a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
Dr. James Avery, and again, folks, you can go to the Christian Medical and Dental Association's website, cmda.org, and click on their resources, and you'll find information there on obtaining a copy of the book. Our guest today, Dr. James Avery, taking an honest look at marijuana. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.